This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 22nd, 2019. Welcome to the special 100th edition. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. Features include some of the sounds of the very first The Breaker.News podcast. You'll also hear from British Columbia Legislature Speaker Daryl Plekis after the Auditor General's report. On the big deal feature, Port Coquitlam Mayor Brad West, the rookie mayor of a Vancouver suburb who has spoken out against Chinese Communist Party meddling in BC politics. And Liberal leader Justin Trudeau's bozo eruption from the year 2001 that was heard and seen around the world. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who are making a difference. This is what it sounded like when the Breaker.News podcast debuted 100 weeks ago on November 5th, 2017. This is the debut edition of the Breaker.News podcast for the 5th of November 2017. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues and institutions. It is a vehicle to stop secrecy, to unravel the spin, and to enable citizens to better scrutinize those who hold power and influence on the west coast of Canada and beyond. I hope you'll tune in weekly and tell your friends, your enemies too, about the Breaker.News. The big deal feature on the first edition of the Breaker.News podcast was the speech by The Intercept's Glenn Greenwald at the Allard Prize Awards at the University of British Columbia. In his speech, Greenwald recounted some of his work telling the story of whistleblower Edward Snowden, and he also talked about the nominees for the Anti-Corruption Awards.
So I want to just talk a little bit about the three finalists because there's something that strikes me that I find really interesting about it, which is that at first glance, if you look at them, they're actually an extremely disparate group. When you look at them, you at first think, wow, they have almost nothing in common. To begin with, Khaja Ismailova is a journalist. Aza Soliman is an activist. And then the car wash prosecutors are lawyers and prosecutors. Brazil itself is a democracy, albeit a corrupt a corrupt oligarchy, but it is a democracy, whereas Egypt is an autocracy, a brutal dictatorship, and Azerbaijan is, I think, best described as a kleptocracy. So you can see a lot of differences. But I think that really what defines all of them, and anyone who does brave anti-corruption work, are a series of very common attributes. I actually think the three finalists tonight have far more in common with one another than they do differences. And to talk about these attributes, I want to talk to you a little bit about the experience that I had that has really shaped how I view this kind of work and the heroic nature of it and the reason why it deserves protection and admiration. And that was the work that I did with my source, the whistleblower Edward Snowden. The work that I did with Edward Snowden really was transformative for me in so many ways, and it really illuminated so many critical issues that have shaped how I think about things that I'm sure will last for the rest of my life. And one of the reasons that that's true is for a long time before I began doing that work, I was writing a lot about the need to be adversarial to those in power, to stand up to the country's most powerful factions whenever they're engaged in corruption and wrongdoing. And what I ultimately discovered is that it's actually somewhat easy to say that, but much more difficult to actually do it when the time comes that you're confronted with it. And you don't actually fully understand what it entails until you actually go and do it and live all the risks and live all the threats and live all the difficulties and burdens and choices that you have to make. So I just want to share with you a couple of anecdotes that I think really illuminate why the work of the three finalists is so important and what binds together people who, at great risk to themselves, do this sort of thing. So when I first started talking to Edward Snowden, it was late 2012, and he contacted me via the internet. And we ended up speaking for many weeks, during which I had no information at all, no knowledge whatsoever about who he was. He was telling me, and then he had demonstrated to me that he had taken extremely sensitive documents from the most secretive agency within the world's most powerful government, which he said he wanted to share with me. And he then demonstrated that he had those. But I didn't know his name. I didn't know where he worked. I didn't know anything about him personally. I didn't know his age. I knew nothing. And in the very first conversation, the very first one that I ever had with him, he said, look, I want to give you these materials because I know that the world needs to see them. And I think you're the person who can deliver them in a way that will be effective. And I started to talk to him about ways that I could shield his anonymity to protect the government, to protect him from having the government discover who he was. And he said, no, you don't understand. I don't want anonymity.
On September 19th, British Columbia's Auditor General, Carol Bellringer, issued her first report on the BC legislature spending scandal. Bellringer found that policies either did not exist or were not followed, and that there was no violation reporting mechanism. But the report disappointed the man who demanded it, Speaker Darrell Plekis. He uncovered corruption in the offices of the Clerk and Sergeant at Arms that led to an RCMP investigation and suspension of Craig James and Gary Lenz. Lenz remains on paid leave pending an investigation under the Police Act. James retired in disgrace in May when he was found in misconduct for buying personal goods with taxpayers' money. The Breaker.News was the first to interview Darrell Plekis after the audit was released, and you can see a video of the full interview on the Breaker.News. Here are some audio highlights of Speaker Plekis reacting to the Bellringer report.
I have to say that I was really quite surprised by what ended up being the final report. I was under the impression, right from the beginning, that it would be a forensic audit. I had meetings with the auditor and her staff where I called attention to matters which I thought were criminal and had specific discussions about that. So I had lots of reason to, and some of which is indicated in my first report, I had lots of reason to think that there was untoward activity, unusual. I think the Auditor General has been quoted as saying she found nothing unusual and nothing which would indicate any kind of criminal wrongdoing, or any kind of fraud. I just have to say that boggles me. I've seen what I would describe as full-blown fraud with my own two eyes, discussed it with her people, and ultimately turned it over to police. I'm just astounded that there was no wrongdoing found there. So the forensic audit would have been so pointed to what the concern was. The concern was about the behavior of two individuals, and I said, well, of course, you know, include me in whatever you do, so that, you know, and that it's sort of like, don't turn any kind of attention to what might be going on in my office. I certainly don't have a problem with that. I thought that the information could have been presented in a way which was far less misleading. One of the things which has been called attention to is the so-called tripling of my expenses in the last year. One would have thought that somebody would drill down on that. Somebody would look at it and say, well, gee, how much of that is related to speaker travel? And what was the speaker's travel rather than this global expense to the speaker's office? And by the way, let's look at that against what we know about spending in other offices. There was no attention called to that. I was also surprised, just reminded by what we're just talking about here, that I was expecting an audit to go back to 2012. You know, there was, the premier had raised the alarm about problems with policies and lack of policies back then. Auditor generals had done that, and one would have thought that we could have seen some improvements since then. So, number one, I was expecting a forensic audit. I believe, I still do, that there's more than ample reason to think we ought to have one. That didn't happen. The focus was on policy. And one of the things which didn't surprise me, but I think a main finding of the Auditor General, was that basically we have no policies. There's, you know, it wouldn't matter what you're looking at. It's spending in any manner of form, we don't have safeguards in place. I would say that that finding is worse than any other finding we could have come up with, because anybody who understands corruption and corruption in organizations would say that that is nothing short of a candy store for corruption. Like, if you want to facilitate, enable, allow people to do things, engage in untoward behavior, what better way to do it than have no policies at all?
D.C. Legislature Speaker Daryl Plekis in an exclusive interview with TheBreaker.News. Watch the whole interview on TheBreaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on TheBreaker.News podcast. The Union of British Columbia Municipalities Convention is finally here. The annual gathering of mayors, councillors, and bureaucrats from across the province is this week in Vancouver. It is being held under a cloud of controversy because of a reception on September 25th at the Waterfront Center Hotel that is sponsored and hosted by the People's Republic of China, a sponsor of the UBCM for 7 years. Sino-Canadian relations are suffering. The two countries have had a falling out since Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou was arrested on a U.S. warrant last December at Vancouver International Airport, and China retaliated by arresting diplomat Michael Kovrig and businessman Michael Spavor. Brad West, the mayor of Port Coquitlam, has led a boycott campaign, citing concerns about China's foreign influence campaign and human rights abuses. West spent 3 terms on Port Coquitlam City Council before winning the mayoralty last October at age 33. He is this week's guest on the Breaker.News podcast.
Well, thanks for having me on. For me, it's a matter of principle. I think that when we get elected by our local residents, our local citizens, our duty and responsibility is to them. And I think it is completely inappropriate and completely at odds with our responsibility to our residents to be allowing ourselves to be influenced in any way, shape, or form by a foreign government, period, any foreign government. And so in the instance of the UBCM, where we have an organization that is comprised of mayors and city councillors from across the province of British Columbia, and that organization takes a check from the government of China in exchange for providing the government of China access to BC mayors and city councillors, I think what we have there is a gross violation of what our responsibility and duties are. I think that it would be wrong if it were any foreign government. But I also think that China presents a unique set of challenges, and I think is particularly appalling and egregious. And that's because China is engaged in a number of actions that are completely hostile to Canadian national interests and to the interests of our citizens. And beyond that, China is also probably almost without rival one of the worst human rights abusers in the entire world. And so when I put all of that together, when I consider that we currently have 2 Canadian citizens, 2 of our fellow Canadians, who are being held in a Chinese jail, held hostage, really, and completely as retaliation for Canada following the rule of law. When I think about the provocative actions of the government of China against our farmers, when I think about the things that we have seen in the past several months on the streets of Vancouver and Metro Vancouver, where the government of China is clearly behind a coordinated attempt to silence voices and intimidate voices in support of freedom and democracy in Hong Kong, I just think that it is beyond my comprehension that any elected official in this province would think that it would be appropriate to attend an event and accept free drinks, free food, and be wined and dined by the very government that is behind all of those actions.
At the UBCM convention, when this does happen, there will also be debates among the UBCM delegates before it happens. What is your plan? Are you going to boycott entirely, or are you going to stand outside the room, the building, pass out pamphlets? What's your plan?
So I have said that I'm going to boycott the reception, and I have called upon other mayors and city councillors to do the same. I'll tell you, I really thought long and hard about this. I considered whether there was any value in me attending it and trying to raise these issues, raise the fate of our fellow citizens who are being held, raise what China is doing to the Uyghurs in their country, where they are essentially trying to exterminate a group of people because they're Muslim, raise the violent repression in Hong Kong, raise any number of issues that we're experiencing right now. And if I thought for a nanosecond that I would have any headway with that, that I would even have the opportunity to do that, I may very well have gone that route. But what has been clear to me in the information I have been able to obtain and in speaking to people who have attended the event, it's not really set up as a dialogue about issues and concerns. It's set up to facilitate relationship building between the People's Republic of China and local government officials. And so I don't want to lend any credibility to that effort or event whatsoever. So I will not be attending it. I will be boycotting it. What I will be doing throughout the UBCM convention is raising this issue at every opportunity. I have spoken to a number of other mayors and city councillors throughout the province. I'm pleased that a number of them have said that they are in support of my position. That's not universal by any stretch. There are others who see no issue with it and plan on attending. But I will be looking for opportunities throughout the convention to raise my concerns about the, in my opinion, the completely unethical practice of the UBCM taking money, taking sponsorship from the People's Republic of China. If there ends up being a demonstration or a rally or some sort of event outside the reception to send a message that it is not supported in our province, then I most certainly will be there to lend my support to those people.
This has brought you a lot of attention, supporters, you know, people in the community that know of you and voted for you, but people outside of Port Coquitlam around the province have supported you. You've also received some scorn from critics. What have you said to those critics to get them to understand the importance of this issue?
Yeah, you know, I guess I learned a while ago that sometimes you can't argue with people who don't want to be convinced of something. And, you know, so there's some people who think that, oh, I'm doing this to promote myself, or I'm doing this because I want to set myself up to run for higher office. And, you know, and there's been, you know, kind of that sort of BS thrown around. And the reality is, it's like water off a duck's back. I just ignore it because it's not true. This to me is a deeply held matter of principle. I take it seriously when I swore an oath to the people of Port Coquitlam to serve as their mayor and make decisions in the best interests of this community and of our citizens. And I believe that actually means something. And it's not, that's not just something you do. That actually means something when you take that oath as an elected official. And so for me, there is no way that I can live up to the commitment I made to the people of Port Coquitlam and not speak out on an issue like this. Because it is my belief that British Columbia and Canada is uniquely challenged, maybe with the only other exception being Australia, as being the subject of significant attempts that are coordinated and deliberate and methodical from the government of China to expand their influence in our country and in our affairs. And all you need to do is look at some of the warnings that have been issued over the years by CSIS, by the former head of CSIS. Look at what is happening right now with the biggest breach of intelligence and security in our country's history. And while it is early days in that investigation, it's not a stretch when you look at the facts to see that the road leads back to the People's Republic of China. And so this to me is something that is right in front of our face, right in front of our nose. And it's happening in all sorts of different arenas. We have elected officials who go on trips to China, paid for by the government of China. In what world is something like that okay? How did we get to a point where people who are elected officials who take an oath to serve our communities and our citizens and our country forgot who they're working for and can rationalize things like going on free trips to the government, to China, paid for by the government? It's just, to me, this is really important stuff. It matters. It has an impact on our democracy, on our country, on our future. Think about the issues that we have been dealing with in the province of British Columbia. We have an opioid crisis, which is completely linked back to fentanyl, which has been coming into this province, largely from China. We have had issues with money laundering, which has had devastating consequences for British Columbians in our housing market, in our casinos. Again, we now have it very well established, the link between that money laundering and organized crime based out of China. And so many of our issues that we're dealing with lead back there. And it is no wonder that the government of China is so aggressive in trying to expand their influence and grow their soft power. I am just astounded that they've had so much success at it. And I think that it is time we have leaders in our communities and our province and our country who are willing to stand up and resist that and to put forth an agenda that's based on what is in the best interest of our people and our country and our communities. And that means, yes, we'll have a relationship with China, but it needs to be a relationship that is balanced. And we need to come at it from a place of what is in our national interests. And I believe that we have gone down a very dangerous path in this country. And so to me, that's what this is about. It's not about anything else other than that. And, you know, the people who want to try and point fingers or say that this is about self-promotion are just A, wrong, B, intellectually lazy, because that's the best they can come up with. They don't really have a response to the substance of my concerns or critiques. They have to try and do little stupid cheap shots like that. But what I've heard very clearly from people in Port Coquitlam and in Metro Vancouver and in the province is that they're glad that there is someone who is standing up and fighting for them and fighting for our interests and resisting, again, what I think is a very coordinated and deliberate effort by the government of China to grow their influence at every level of government in this country.
China, as you said, has been successful in the strategy through the soft power, through the official channel of the Communist Party's United Front Work Department, in silencing a lot of mayors and other politicians in British Columbia, and also trying to convey that the Chinese community is one homogenous blob. It's not.
Absolutely.
We've seen, until recently, Hong Kong Canadians were quiet. They have now started to stand up and be heard about their concerns about Hong Kong, where many Canadians do live. The Taiwanese community has been also ignored a lot. It's a democracy. Hong Kong wants to be a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
But again, mainland China has successfully neutered or placed a chilling effect to the point where Port Coquitlam's mayor, not the mayor of Vancouver, Burnaby, or Richmond, or Surrey, the major municipalities, but mayor of Port Coquitlam is the one that is really putting his neck on the line.
I mean, it's really the proof in the pudding, because there has been such a reluctance, not only in local government, but at the provincial level, at the federal level. There's sort of this dome of silence that comes down. And, you know, we have gotten ourselves in a position in this country where our elected leaders can barely muster any criticism of the most heinous actions undertaken by the government of China for fear of offending them, for fear that even the slightest critique will upset them, and that will have huge consequences for our country. How can we be in a situation like that and for people to think that that's okay? I mean, that in of itself is a major problem. I just refuse to accept that status quo as our destiny. I mean, I think that's such a dangerous place for our country to be in. And again, this isn't about the fact that it's China. Remove China and place another country. If another country and its government were undertaking the same type of actions against our country and against their own people and engaged in the same type of behavior around the world, the same criticism would apply. And so it is, you know, it has been so disturbing to see how successful they've been. You know, there are no shortage of critics who will rightfully say things about what's happening in the United States. And lots of politicians at the federal level, the provincial level, and the municipal level will offer you an opinion about what's happening in the United States. And rightly so. They have every right to criticize, and I do as well, things that are happening in the United States. But when it comes to China, where the government is engaged in things that go beyond the pale or that are far more horrific than anything that Donald Trump has ever done, you get crickets. You get silence. because again, there's this fear that, well, we couldn't possibly upset them. So we have a profoundly unhealthy relationship between our country and China. And you could not be more correct when you say that this idea that the Chinese or Asian communities within Metro Vancouver are some sort of homogenous group of pro-Beijing people. Since I've spoken up, I've heard from hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are from Hong Kong, who are Taiwanese, who are from mainland China, who are practitioners of Falun Gong, who have escaped or left mainland China because of the brutality of the Chinese Communist Party, because they didn't adhere to the party's orthodoxy. These people have experienced firsthand what the government of China is capable of. And they are as much our residents and constituents as anyone else. And we owe it to them, as well as ourselves, to be speaking up about these issues. And so I think so many elected officials make the mistake that, oh, because you're Chinese Canadian, that means you support what the government of China is doing. It's just, it is insulting. And it's certainly not the case.
That was my interview with Mayor Brad West of Port Coquitlam, British Columbia. You can follow him on Twitter at BradWestPoco.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau. No! Sunny ways, my friends, sunny ways.
Moments ago, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau publicly apologizing for a series of racist photos and a video showing him wearing dark face makeup.
This 2001 photo shows then 29-year-old Justin Trudeau wearing brown face. Time magazine obtained the picture from a yearbook of a private school where the Canadian Prime Minister taught at the time.
When as a high school teacher, he was part of a gala with an Arabian Nights theme. Other images, including a grainy video, have also emerged of Trudeau in similar makeup.
This image will lead to questions of authenticity and whether Justin Trudeau is indeed the poster boy of liberalism that he claims to be.
You had to ask me that question, right, Justin? I'm surprised, and I was more surprised when I saw it the number of times. And, you know, I've always had a good relationship with Justin. I just don't know what to tell you. I was surprised by it, actually.
With the situation happening with Justin Trudeau with the black faces, that's, things have been popping
I think
up.
It's insulting. I think it's offensive. I think that if he wanted forgiveness, he should have said that when he was running the first time. He knew then he had done it. And now he's saying he did it more than once. I think that you can't have different rules for different people.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is facing criticism after a photo from 2001 surfaced in which he is wearing brown face. I'm not going to show you the picture because it's really bad. It's so bad that Canadians traveling in Europe are going to start telling people they're American.
By his own revolution, watch him grovel. How deep he's got to grovel as he says sorry for having been such a disgusting racist.
I shouldn't have done that. I should have known better, but I didn't. And I'm really sorry.
The preceding clips were courtesy of CNN, Al Jazeera, TMZ, France 24, DW, Sky News, and NBC, with special appearances by Donald Trump, Al Sharpton, and Seth Meyers.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends, sunny ways.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or a group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to you. Every one of you who has listened to the Breaker.News podcast over the last 100 weeks. As I said on the first edition on November 5th, 2017, tell your friends, tell your enemies too. And I make you this promise. When there are enough of you, and we can afford it here, you'll all get your own real Nanaimo Bar to enjoy. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the 100th edition of the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 22nd, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on September 22nd in 1888, the first issue of National Geographic was published? A magazine that has featured foxes and mice has become owned by some of them. In 2015, 21st Century Fox bought 73%. In 2017, Disney bought control of Fox. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.